Welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn. With me, as always, is Mike Montgomery.
And this is officially going to be the episode where I realize, I'm a Takeshi Miike fan.
The film that was meant to break you has become your new kink. Oh no, oh god. This is 1999's Audition.
And, quite simply for me with this, you remember everything that I was complaining about that I did not get in Human Centipede?
Mm-hmm.
It was all here.
Yeah, this film is really good at characterization, giving you interesting, plot elements, plot-driven responses, character-driven responses, trauma-driven responses that, going into it, you're like, what the fuck? And at the end, you're like, oh, that's the fuck.
Yeah.
Well done, movie. You told a story. Sometimes that's harder than you'd think.
And then once the movie hits that point, it goes, okay, you're with us. You're drawn in. All right, good. Let's get fucking weird.
Yeah, let's get weird. And by weird, we mean 1999 weird. This is a solidly 1999 weird. I remember when people were disturbed by this. I remember a girl puking after watching the trailer for this. I remember that.
But I can understand.
At the time, the internet wasn't quite the beast it is now. Sure, you could find that kind of horribleness, but you had to really go looking for it. And quite frankly, half the times what you would find, like in the case of people being like, oh man, I got this sweet rip of Faces of Death, man. And it's like, Faces of Death ain't real, you dumb bastard. You would end up with something like that. Like, so much of the grotesquerie of the early internet was fake because it was really easy to convince people of anything. And so it wasn't something that you saw as much of. There was no monster fuckers had not yet united. Let's just say that.
Yeah, War of the Worlds was once a thing. We still have not learned.
And it's fascinating because, yeah, whereas now this would be kind of like, oh, it's kind of interesting. You could see this, not this movie necessarily itself. It would have to have a dramatic reshooting to get to this level of awards in terms. But you could see a movie like this winning an Oscar now, and people just being like, it really discusses issues of trauma. And it's like, yeah, and there's also force amputation. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a metaphor. And people would not just be immediately grossed out. And it was a shock film at the time. It's a very slow burning shock film.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. But also, I would like to point out that technically a film like this did win an Oscar. Do you remember the Korean horror film Parasite from a couple of years ago?
Oh, I do. Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not, well, no. Shit, you're right. Yeah, Outright outright and overboard even more so. Parasite is the exact film. Like, if this was a better film, it would be Parasite.
I mean, frankly, yeah, but
I'm not crapping on it. It's exactly what it needs to be.
It's if Audition was made like 20 years later, it would have been Parasite. If Parasite was made 20 years earlier, it would have been Audition.
Yeah, and if Audition was made 10 years earlier, it would have been Cyberpunk. It's a very neo-noir film. If it was made 10 years later, it would have been about like social media profiles and, you know, the fucking crazies that you've come across. Like, there have been attempts to remake this in English ever since, because obviously, and fucking duh. So happy they haven't, because you know for a fact it would just be like online dating. It's great until they kill you.
At the end of the day, an American version of this would be, I think, nothing more than Fatal Attraction with more social media.
Yeah, the only way to do an American version of this would be to go like Grindhouse and make sure it is hard set in the VHS era, like video dating, and, you know, have that technology be an element of it. Far more hardcore, because this film is good. It's based on a novel. The novel goes into like the backstory of characters more explicitly, but everything is there. But it would need one more level to really step over into something extra special. I mean, like, this movie was made essentially to make any money that they can on the back of the success of the original Ringu, because that was a massive thing in Japan, and they were like, Japanese horror's back, baby. Everyone's afraid of hot chicks with really silky hair. And so. They chased after any story that they could. And Audition, like I said, was a book by Ryu Murakami. And it was like a well-respected late 90s thriller, kind of like semi-relationship horror book. It's a weird film because in many ways it's considered this ultimate horror film. But really, it's kind of like the equivalent of The English Patient.
Well, yeah, in a sense, I think also, I mean, it's, first and foremost, it's art house horror, like we've kind of already said. And also, I did see a comparison on one of the IMDb reviews where I was just like, yeah, that's kind of perfect, because, and like we were talking earlier about how if this were made in a different time period, it would be this other movie. There's also, if this were made in Italy, this would be a Dario Argento film.
it would be like way more intentionally sexy in a more disturbing way.
Well, and there's also like there's also the same kind of sense of disorientation that I was getting here that I also got from Suspiria.
I love the unannounced unrealities.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, hey, I know this film hasn't given you any sense at all previously that I'll just like go into hallucinations or flashbacks or what ifs or whatever. But here you go, and shoves you into a pool and you're not too sure which way's up for a moment.
Yeah.
Just fuck.
Which, and also just to add to that, and this sounds strange as I'm saying it, but I, just because of my schedule, the first time I tried to get through this, it was like 9:30 at night on this past Saturday when I was like exhausted, and that should have been a bad idea. But it worked more because I was so tired.
I mean, I could see that working. This is,
yeah.
I think I saw this first on like Showcase in the early 2000s, late at night, like maybe after an episode of Oz or some shit. It has a very, okay, watch this late at night, lull you in, and then show you some weird shit just as you're like nodding off and not sure if you saw that. Same thing happened to me when I was, first time I watched Jacob's Ladder, because again, Showcase late at night.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. A war movie. No. Jacob's Ladder is not a war movie. And so when Jacob's Ladder starts doing Jacob's Ladder-y shit, and I'm like, was that a nightmare I just woke up from, or did I just see that? I don't know. Also, I'm alone and it's dark. Yay.
But I think also it also caused my brain to work harder processing this, because like the early bit was like, I knew right away that it's kind of a character study of this widower and loneliness and so forth. But I was also kind of going, is he doing a commentary on Japanese society? There's kind of almost an incel-ish element.
There's so much potential in every aspect of this that is immediately contradicted when you think about it long enough. Like, there have been apparently like multiple essays and theories on like, is this film chauvinist or feminist? And it's like, it's both. No one is a good person in this, except maybe the kid to some extent. I don't know. Maybe he kicks old ladies off screen. I don't know. We don't get full extents, but like every male in this seemingly is not necessarily a great guy. I mean, okay. So our protagonist is Shigeharu, Aoyama, and Shigeharu is, he's not a bad guy. He's a widower who has raised his son. You know, the kid seems to be pretty decent. They go fishing together. But he treats women somewhat disposably, in that there's an extended montage where he and one of his friends, who is a movie producer, TV producer, come up with this interview scheme to help him meet the perfect potential wife by faking an audition process. And like half faking, there isn't like a reveal halfway through, like this is a bad rom-com where it's like, oh, there is no part, I just need a wife. And it's like, oh, and then Sandra Bullock gets mad and runs away, but then she decides that she actually really does love Colin Farrell or Colin Firth or one of the fucking Collins. I can't remember. Anyway, she comes back and on her terms the relationship goes forward. No, it's not so much that. It's it's very much meant to be a, he's treating them as a product and he's essentially Harvey Weinsteining himself towards a second wife.
Yeah.
And that's bad. That's bad. That is why he technically, quote unquote, deserves what he done get. In the jigsaw pathology.
Yeah, again, there's so many ways you could go with that. But first of all, I would just like to mention that you just accidentally pitched a horror movie with Sandra Bullock as the killer. I want it.
It's everyone that you would usually have. Hugh Grant's there. Liv Schreiber shows up just long enough to get like axed in the back or something, The Shining style. It's a full on normal romantic comedy. We can even get like Kevin Klein to show up for a cameo, and she just murders everyone. Like really slowly garrots George Clooney. It's a long 10-minute scene in which she's like on his back and he's just They work wonderfully together. You can imagine the chemistry.
I was just going to say, all the male leads are Sandra Bullock's friends in real life. And she's
she just has to brutalize them.
So she immediately takes the part and like just is paid at scale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This movie really is an act of love and artistry. Love, artistry, and resentment.
Oh, but, and like, I also, and again, this may have been my sleep deprived brain at the time, but with a lot of the horror sequences and the hallucinations and so forth at the end, the fact that you don't know what's real and what's not is so wonderful, because I'm going, is she actually brutally torturing and murdering him? Is his subconscious torturing him over his treatment of her?
Hmm.
I'm not quite sure what's happening, and I love it.
Yeah, and at that point, it doesn't so much matter.
True.
All that matters is you're watching it. And it's like, yeah, I am. Huh. That's interesting. Wonder what that means. Because, yeah, like, So he's a dickhead, but she's not exactly a ray of sunshine either. Let's be clear. She mutilates people who piss her off. She mutilates and murders men who piss her off. But she's only like that because her dance instructor not only tortured her. So in the movie, it's like physical, you know, abuse and mutilation. But in the book, it's years and years of torment and abuse and manipulation and bad things. And like, the guy's kind of a creep in the movie. He is an outright fucking horror in the book, apparently. And like the entire point of him being there is like, see, sometimes she does it to people who deserve it. And wouldn't you like to see his legs get cut off? Yeah, come on. So, you know, you're set up as an audience member to find ways to feel empathy with everyone in this, and then realize that that means you're bad. They're a bad person.
Yeah, it's like, as much as Asami is the villain, I can't hate her.
Yeah, because she's like, she's broken.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not like going through some evil scheme or something. She is so fucking broken that she can't even accept someone having like a child from another relationship. Like, that's what he never cheats on her. He doesn't cheat on her. He obsesses about her. But because he happens to also have a child, which she is fully aware of and is an adult, so it's not like she has to look after him. He's got to die. You got to die. It's like, fucking hell. You are crazy.
Yeah, like, because of how much she has been abused and tortured, if she is in a relationship with someone and that person's love is not 110% for her, like you said, they're going to die. Mm-hmm. She cannot share.
And so it makes a far richer story. It's not necessarily one I want to return to all that much. It's not one that begs for a sequel in any way.
No.
But it's memorable to the point that 23 years later, people are still like, audition. Oh, yeah. Meanwhile, the thing that made people go, is so like nothing on the internet. If you gave me 5 minutes on Twitter, I'm sure I could find someone who finds that like the bag thing.
Mm.
To be the hottest potential way they could spend a night.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt that, but at the same time. Okay, because, like I said, I was half asleep the first time I went through this movie. So yeah. I decided to use my lunch break at work before we were originally scheduled to record to watch the final hour and kind of fill in the blanks.
Oh, no.
And I cannot describe how glad I am that all of my coworkers are already so used to me being on my iPad when I'm on my lunch. So therefore, nobody was looking.
Terrible thing.
Because I'm there watching the final hour, and this is where I discovered the dude in the bag. And mm. At one point, she's kind of off camera, and it sounds like she's puking into a bowl that correct. she then brings to feed to him. And I'm sitting there trying to hold it together and not get sick myself.
Yeah, the funny thing is I sat there and went, that's not vomit. That's not what it looks like when someone eats vomit. Thank you, Internet, for showing me things I did not want to know to the point that I can look at that and not be grossed out because it's like, that's not puke. I'll show you someone eating puke.
Well, yeah, no, like, I think that was honestly the one thing that saved me from throwing up in front of my coworkers.
So I've watched this film with the subtitles before. I think I even watched it dubbed once. I've only seen it a handful of times before. This would be like maybe the third or fourth time. I'm pretty sure it was subbed on Showcase. But when I was showing it to someone, they like brought a DVD over and I think it was dubbed. And anyway, that doesn't matter. What matters is this time when I watched it, I couldn't get the SRT file to work for any of the files. None of them. So I watched this movie without knowing any of the dialogue. Like, I have previously seen it. I know the story. I know all that. I don't understand Japanese. I could understand konnichiwa, hi, and like sonimasen, and that's about it. It's all you need to know as a white moron in Japan, especially sonimasen. Gaijin, sorimasen. Anyway, so I watched this with only the actors' emotional performances, the on-screen presentation, and, you know, the knowledge of what's coming. But, like, just considering everything that is on screen, and my appreciation of this film definitely rose. Because, as I said earlier, I now consider this to be a neo-noir, and I hadn't thought of that before. But relying entirely on the visuals to watch this film this last time, it's absolutely a neo-noir. You could take this and drop it right, especially you could drop it right into, like, Cyberpunk 2077. I have that game, and my character has the Johnny Mnemonic laser whip thing that cuts off hands and feet and heads. Carrie, what's his name? The Japanese actor.
Give me a character name.
The top bad guy from Mortal Kombat, the movie.
Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the ones, the laser whip that Kari Tagawa,
Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa.
The laser whip that Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa uses there in Giant Mnemonic. It's fantastic. It would work perfectly into this, where instead of it just being the wire thing that she eventually kills you with horribly, it's just the laser whip. You don't have to change any of the visuals, maybe add a little bit of neon, but it's so perfectly neo-noir cyberpunky in its setup and its use of body horror and its use of technology to drive the horror experience. Like, this is actually closer, I feel, to Videodrome than, say, Human Centipede.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I could totally see that. And like I said, I think this is the antithesis of Human Centipede. In that, like, with Asami, you have essentially the doctor character from Human Centipede, but she has this wonderful thing called clear motivation.
She's not an over-the-top caricature.
And Aoyama, our protagonist, is not an idiot.
No. He makes stupid decisions, yes, but he has reasons for his stupid decisions.
Oh, yeah.
And it's part of his character. It's like, that is a flaw, and we will see that play out. It's not just, oops, didn't think of that when I was writing it. Oh, well.
And, but also at the same time, though, like, are they stupid decisions, or are they decisions that someone in late 90s, early 2000s Japan, and if you were a Japanese listener, realgeekshfx@gmail.com, please, for the love of God, write in and correct me. But, like, early 2000s Japanese society would have been patriarchal as fuck.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, like, yeah, you can completely see how the decisions, the choices, the actions were driven by presumptions within a certain society at a certain time. And that's probably also why the film struck a chord with so many people, because, like, at the time it was like, oh my fucking God, you know, it was still kind of creeping up on people in Japan. Like, there were still people of retirement age who had fought in the war, who had been officers in the Empire of Japan, not, you know, Japanese citizens in, you know, the modern state of Japan, where you can buy an entire week's food from vending machines, and some men choose to spend their entire lives with pillows rather than find a wife.
Yep.
It's a different world.
Yeah, and I mean, there are, of course, shall we say, other things that you could buy from vending machines.
Indeed. That's a cliche that is also true in certain areas, of course. I'm recently truly fascinated by these Living in Japan YouTube videos, where, like, so there, between certain cities, you can get late night ferries, like overnight sailing ferries, right?
Yeah.
And aboard, if you want any food, you have to use vending machines. But they have, like, entire banks of vending machines that have, like, over 150 different meals in the vending machines, plus snacks, plus, like, toys for kids, some entertainment if you want, drinks, various kinds of drinks, desserts, everything. And so, like, you never interact with staff. You only interact with the vending machines. And that's fascinating. Fascinating.
And especially now with the pandemic, I'm sure there are a lot of people hearing this and going, that's not a bad idea.
And it's just, it's like, okay, well, that's like, it's a level of automation, but also, like, insularity.
Yeah.
Like, it's fascinating. And fascinatingly Japanese, because it's not, like, necessarily shown as a bad thing to be left to your own devices. Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And also with that patriarchal element, there was one thing I wanted to ask, because I don't know if this was a technical issue with my copy of the movie or if this was a choice the director actually made. But during, I think mostly during the first act of the film, like, I think right up to just after the actual auditions, I had a lot of trouble hearing the female dialogue.
I think that is intentionally lowered, not only to draw you in, but as a commentary on... like, the main character is a chauvinist, and even when he's paying attention to a woman, he's not actually paying attention to, say, what she's saying. You know, like that's not part a part of the volume of his world.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought, because that was where my brain went to the incel like element.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely meant to be there. You're supposed to think like he's kind of a jackass. He's an incel jackass. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
He assumes that he is owed a wife, and therefore.
Oh yeah, no, like, it was one of those. I wasn't sure, but I was so fascinated by this just because it was only the female dialogue where I was having the problem.
Hmm. Yeah, I believe that is meant to give an aspect of how often a female voice is drowned out, but not only intentionally drowned out, it's like what is it? Some men can't hear certain pitches that women's voices are in, and so it's like they're just it's fucking doomed. You know, like he's not listening, and even if he could, he is engineered not to hear you. That's a bad design. That is a failure. Yeah. But it's a now also a commentary on his character. He's not listening. He never was listening. He can't really listen. And depending on how you take that, and she took it the worst way, it can imply a bunch of things about character.
Oh yeah, and it's also very much, especially in that case, one of those little details where I'm just like, I really wish more directors would do things like that.
Mm. Yeah, and it's more difficult now because I was reading a cool article about sound engineers, and like the reason why it seems that sound is more muddled in recent films, and they're like, well, there are larger set pieces and everyone has or wants to play up to like the most incredible sound system, but most theaters and like home theaters don't have that kind of thing. You're still like forcing it through someone's fucking speakers on a TV.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure dialogue's at a certain level, but some people argue about dialogue, and then, you know, the musicians come in, they want to be at some level. And then apparently after the sound is all mixed by a movie, like, okay, the sound is done. These are the levels we wanted at. They send it off to another company that finishes the thing, and they just like compress the whole goddamn thing without care. Ooh. And it's like, okay, so this is happening because everyone's trying everything that they can. No one's agreeing on some sort of universal workflow to make this work. And so everyone is putting their best effort in stuffing it, overstuffing, contradicting, and then it gets fucking pressed into a cube. Well then, no wonder modern sound sounds like hell. And so directors increasingly don't do that kind of stuff because it's just like, why? You're just gonna fucking ruin it on me.
I mean, that sucks, but yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. You know, that's a technical issue that can be worked out at some point within the industry. And it has to be because like that sound problem has been going on well before The Dark Knight, when people started finally noticing it, thanks to Christian Bale's Batman voice.
Yeah, and then there was Bane's voice that everybody was complaining they couldn't understand him under the mask.
Yeah, and I never understood. When, like, it finally universalized. And okay, so there's a couple of ways that's okay, so there's a couple of explanations behind that. One, yeah, some people just have a weird problem with, like, odd English accents, and I can understand not being able to necessarily understand it as well. The mask thing, people weren't necessarily used to, so you combine those two things, fine. But specifically, when people complain about the voice being unintelligible, there was a completely different cut of all of the Bane audio that was in the very first teaser trailer. And that's what everyone like linked to in their mind, because that one was absolutely intentionally unintelligible. It's meant to be like what? I don't know what's happening, and I'm scared. But the producers reacted to that and said, no, we have to know what he's saying. So for all the rest of the promotional material and the released film, they kept making his voice clearer and clearer to the point that his accent sounded weirder and weirder because it was meant to be nearly unintelligible. And I miss the original one because I love the idea of like, no, it was literally like, I don't know what you're saying. Oh God, you're throwing me out of a plane. You know, that's fucking scary. The guy says something, you don't know what it says. Oh, it was a question you didn't answer? Dude, it's too late. You're dead now. That's fucking scary. But they were like, we don't get that. Make it clear. Make it obvious. So by the end, you end up with, hello, Mr. UPS man.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe I just missed that very first teaser or something, because I honestly don't remember having ever had a problem understanding Bane.
I remember when people were like trying to transcribe his lines. It was when they released the just barely finished version of the plane rescue scene. That was before any of the trailers released for the movie. They released that. It couldn't tell a fucking word of what he was saying. It was fantastic, though, because it just made him imposing as fuck.
Oh, yeah. No, no doubt. Oh. But, I mean, with that, I mean, granted, we're not even at 40 minutes, but with Audition, I honestly don't know what else to say here.
That's the thing. There's not necessarily anything else that has to be said. This isn't a film that launched 1,000 sequels. This isn't a film that even resulted in a Western remake. More because, thankfully, everyone agreed that, like, there's no need. There's no need. It's fine. This is great. Thank you. Takeshi Miike is, of course, renowned. He's now a great name in Japanese cinema and like he's a cult classic name. It got some people reading Japanese literature, which is always a great thing. And it was another wonderful benchmark towards the absurdity that was Saw and Hostel and that whole slew of on-screen torture fetish porn, essentially, that Hollywood went through for a while. Like, this had to happen so that we could get Eli Roth's Hostel and Hostel 2. Why? Listen, I don't know why this universe works this way. I have notes. No one's listening.
Yeah, I think there's a fair bit of Hollywood going, oh, that was successful. We need people that can do that. And a whole lot of people tried.
Yeah. There was a whole lot close to it. And, like, problem is there wasn't any of the, like, Audition is a novel about trauma first.
Yeah.
And a horror torture porn maybe fifth. But when they were promoting this overseas, of course, it immediately became torture porn. Even though that's actually a very small amount of even on screen. So it's one of those odd films that its reputation is vastly outsized by the content. Its reputation vastly outsizes the content, but the content itself is a really neat and pretty good movie. So even if no one had ever mentioned this film to you in your life, you'd still be like, I mean, it was weird, but it was good.
Yeah, that's honestly probably the best way to put it. And I think even with a lot of the weirdness, if you were to watch it now, a lot of that weirdness, I think, comes with Mikkei's reputation. So you're going into the movie looking for that more.
Yeah. And not only that, but like, this is, you know, we're coming from a world where, was it Jinji Ito? Is that the artist's name? Jinji Ito? There are mainstream memes, just jokey memes about existential body horror, like Japanese existential body horror mangas, by the name Jinji Ito. It is something like that. If you've seen the image online of a guy hanging off the side of a cliff and pointing at a hole that is in the shape of a man and going, "This is my hole. It was made for me." That's from one of his books.
Okay.
And it's like this, it's kind of like about faith and, fate and fear of the future, in that people are compelled to go into these holes that they claim are made for them. Like, they recognize it as part of their soul, and it slowly starts crushing them as they're compelled to go further and further in. And it's this whole body horror thing, but you just see that as a joke on Twitter or Facebook now. Like, the world has accepted and amalgamated Japanese horror to the point that I'm surprised that there's not like, I'm surprised there's not a Funko Pop of the guy in the sack.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Sell that. I'm surprised that doesn't exist.
I mean, knowing Funko, like, let's be honest, give it time. And I'm actually just looking at some of Ito's work on Google right now, and you're right, he really does have a thing for holes. Mm-hmm. But also like kind of dual faces.
Yeah. It's terrific horror work, but I've seen it so much online now, like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I read some of it since, and it is fantastic work. It's great, like soul moving horror, but you gotta spend a lot of time not laughing at it because you've seen jokes. It's like, I've seen this whole thing done before, but with like Garfield. So if you see the Garfield parody before, it's really hard to take.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Seriously after.
Yeah.
So that's Audition. It's worth it. It's a fantastic watch. It may not shock and unnerve you the way that it was meant to all them years ago, back in the pre-9/11 days. But if you had just finished watching Spice World and you started watching this, you were probably going to shit your Flair jeans. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a pendulum swing there.
Speaking of minor pendulum swings, what are we watching next?
Speaking of dealing with trauma, we're going to be taking a quick sort of break from horror to check out Black Panther Wakanda Forever, because it's good for our numbers and we're not stupid.
It's horribly entertaining is why.
Well, I mean, there's that, and there are not full on horror, but there are elements in the movie where if they wanted to go that way, like they could.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be a real fun discussion. There's so much to go into on it.
Oh, Lord. Yes.
Yeah, so we'll make up for this short episode with that being a very long-winded one.
Oh, yeah, like, there's all sorts of extra content, like, just this week-ish?
Ish. But until then, if you want to chat with us, get in touch with us, you can email us at...
We can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com or on Twitter at realgeekshfx. If you have any questions, comments, criticisms, recommendations for a possible therapist for me, because between this and The Thing, I don't know which of the two is my favorite of what we've watched so far.
Well, that's good. At least it's not Human Centipede.
Then we need help. That movie.
That movie just sucks. Why? But we're gonna have lots of fun with that.
I can be reached directly at the Maritime Lord on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, or the Maritime Lord at gmail.com. And
I can be found until it burns and collapses into the sea at Twitter, or on Twitter at Friday in Halifax. You can tell it's me because it's got the blue check mark purchased. Yeah. Listen, after 13 years on that fucking hell site and probably as many accounts, I don't give a shit how I got it. If I had to kill the King of England to get it, it's mine. And I'll take it until they take it, you pry it from my fucking account. And everywhere
else. Which
I else,
believe is
going to
be pretty much any time now.
Probably any time now. But until next time now, goodbye now.
See ya.